MoneyWeb now on the money.
The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Chatting now with Peter Little, fund manager at Anchor Capital. Peter, appreciate the very early morning time. Talking around inflation, you put out a note on the Anchor website last week. A couple of points I want to come to. The one that really, really struck me is perhaps not core to this point, but it is a sense of who sort of is better at predicting in inflation relative to what sort of the what it is. And consumers, me and you and listeners, very poor at it. Market, not very good at predicting inflation either. Typically, we're overly pessimistic.
Yeah, Simon, thanks for having me. The reality is nobody's particularly good at predicting inflation, which is not great, but yeah, we try our best.
Yeah, and I suppose to the point, I mean, it is difficult, and hence we're seeing all the talk around it. And your article in particular was, what's all that fuss about? What are we seeing about it? Your sense, I mean, how likely are we to see persistent higher U.S. inflation? There's a lot of data in there, but a lot of it is really, I mean, the transitory and the charts that you put into the article really do sort of support that transitory story.
Yeah, so certainly the stuff that everybody seems to be worried about, that's causing inflation to spike now, we don't think there's sort of two baskets that we pick out of that inflation, out of the inflation basket that make up about 30% of the total basket. Mm. And as you say, it's either stuff was heavily discounted to try and attract business during the pandemic. And that's obviously seeing prices normalize off that low base. Obviously, that can't carry on forever. So that once that stuff's in the base, that'll wane. And then the other basket is the goods that are seeing supply bottlenecks. So particularly stuff linked to the computer chip segment, so vehicles in particular. And they'll figure out a way to sort out those bottlenecks. It'll probably take a few months. But again, that's stuff that we think will be transitory. So we're not saying that you don't necessarily have to worry about inflation. We're just saying that the stuff that's causing it to spike now is not the stuff that's going to ultimately cause us long-term structural inflation problems.
Yeah, and that is that structural, that is the issue. And that then brings us to the likelihood of meaningful higher rates and yields. And you make a great point that U.S. households, U.S. financial sector, U.S. government, truthfully, went into the COVID crisis significantly better off than in the 2008 global financial crisis. It was just better balance sheets, a healthier financial space and economy, which means the coming out, and hence the worries around structural inflation, higher yields is muted.
Yeah, certainly for consumers and corporates, the balance sheet worries are not really there, because the U.S. government basically took all the pain during the pandemic, so it increased its debt fairly substantially in lieu of basically the sort of man on the street and the companies having to do that. So yeah, that's helped a lot. So higher rates won't put as much pressure on the private sector coming out of this.
And then the concern comes. So there's two issues. One is rate increases. The more immediate issue, perhaps, is that tapering and a potential taper tantrum. We certainly saw a fairly significant one in 2013 when the Fed tried to sort of taper down and reduce spend. You're saying that actually, hang on a second, we're well off better than it was in 2013. The rate of QE is larger, but actually a smaller portion of new issues. And that taper tantrum, we might see one, but it will probably be smaller and less tantrumy.
Yeah, so we think, I mean, we look at the differences. For a start, the difference this time is we actually know kind of, we've been through a taper before. We sort of know what to expect. So it's not completely, wandering into the dark here. But just because the size of the balance sheet has increased, and also the size of the U.S. U.S. government issuance has increased so much, we're only seeing the government take up about 7% of the of the issuance every month. I think in the previous pandemic, they were about 15% of the issue, not the previous pandemic, the previous crisis, yeah. They were about 15% of issuance. So when they step away, there's a much smaller hole for the rest of the market to kind of pick up the slack this time. So we think that's pretty helpful. We've seen rates kind of back up in anticipation of this taper happening now. So whereas the previous time kind of markets were slightly more sanguine about what might happen. And so they had sort of further to fall or further to rise when the taper actually started happening. So we think those things are kind of helpful this time. We know what's happening. You know, there's a smaller hole being left by the Fed stepping away and rates have already backed up a little bit. So it should, we think that will make the taper impact ultimately slightly less less aggressive than it was last time.
Yeah, I like that point that we've actually been down this road before. It does give us a little more experience. I mean, the conclusion then which you draw is that in essence, I mean, that really we will see rates go higher. They're unlikely to be significantly moving, but they're still well below sort of I want to say normal rates perhaps, although I don't know what normal is these days. And hence, impact to stock market, the fears that are out there are perhaps unwarranted.
Yeah, so we sort of forecast that we think that 10-year rates will back up towards 2% over the next 12 months. So they've still got a way to sell off from here. But in the greater context of things, that's still not particularly attractive if we think inflation's around 2% probably. Mm-hmm. Still negative real rates, so not particularly exciting. And we think, the stock market is still much more attractive on a relative basis in this. You know, the search for yield is not going away just because we've got 2% government bond rates, even though that's higher than now, it's still not attractive.
Yeah, and you point out in the 90s, cash was 5.2. In the 2000s, the 10-year was 4.2. 2% is not thrillingly exciting there. Peter Little, fund manager, Anchor Capital, appreciate the early morning time. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.